Good morning. I'm Bob Myerson. I'm a member of the congregation. When Glenn asked if I would participate in this service he was planning for today, I was eager to do so. Later on, Glenn will impart his gathered wisdom on identifying the so-called perfect minister. But he felt that having a certain amount of experience in my having the audacity to present Sunday services at a number of UU churches, I might be able to shed some small amount of light on how it feels to face the immediate scrutiny and judgment of a group of strangers who one has never seen before. Although I will tell you that while every congregation I've spoken at shares a certain UU familiarity, commonality, as a guest, it points up that each has some unique focus points. And those variations are mostly and most easily discerned at the post-service coffee hour. I am not a minister. But a few times a year, I dress up like a minister and perform one function, usually in the minister's domain. I have led Sunday services at this UU church as well as about 8 or 9 others over the past few years. I love doing it, and I'm always happy to hear from people here and elsewhere if my so-called sermons, I need to put quotes around that, I've never been comfortable with calling what I do a sermon, but they are essays or editorials merely posing as sermons. The idea of taking the show on the road was the onset, at the beginning, a way of contributing to the financial well-being of our church as well as to those others. By trading lay services with other churches, neither participant receives any compensation. 2 Sundays filled by lay ministers. It has worked well since all of the participants usually save their best efforts for these occasions. I refuse to be stoned to death by unfamiliar hands. So, with one major exception, I have never brought something to another church or fellowship without first presenting it here first. If I am to be booed, let it be by familiar voices. My efforts to present meaningful sermons has been very rewarding to me, and at least one occasion someone has followed up with, "Bob, you've missed your calling. You should have been a minister." No, yet. There is a lot more to being a minister than an occasional talk from the pulpit. A couple of years ago, a friend of mine who was raised as a UU approached me and asked if I would officiate at his father's memorial service in Dallas, Texas. I was taken aback at the request. Surely the UU church could supply a genuine minister. I had never considered any thoughts about doing something like this. He explained to me that he wanted to familiarize me with his dad's history and that I would be his guest while in Texas. I was understandably both honored and a little intimidated, but in the end I acquiesced, and with all the background information, the memorial service went, well, okay. I had attended a few memorial services myself, and my contribution to this one was knowing the various elements of the service. But I did feel somewhat overwhelmed in even presuming to take this on. Leading that memorial service, facing many friends and acquaintances of the deceased, was a completely foreign and unfamiliar aspect of being a minister. While the gathering was appreciative of my efforts and many thanked me for my words, I at the same time felt relieved that it was over, and to be honest, I felt somewhat of a fraud. So going back to the suggestion that I may have missed my calling, I now will put that kind of comment into perspective. In a few minutes, Glenn will present some thoughts on the perfect minister. And in examining the various aspects of actually being a minister, I realized that in no way could I have ever been an effective minister. And this is not false modesty, it is considered self-evaluation. Oh yeah, I can put together a sermon 3 or 4 times a year, but a minister needs to do that about 3 or 4 times a month. Many ministers I've talked to about that subject tell me that they do it in an hour or two, usually the day before the service. It takes me endless hours to come up with a subject, put it down on paper, and edit, sharpen, hone, and edit some more before presenting it. Beyond that, a minister is expected to be a counselor, a patient and sympathetic listener who is non-judgmental and always caring. I wish I had all those traits, but sadly I am, to be generous, lacking in consistency on them. A minister needs to be available for emergencies. A few years ago, I wound up unconscious in the ER at Eden Hospital one evening. The first person I remember seeing when I awoke was my minister. That was, I was told, just part of the job. Okay. Above all, a parish minister needs the quality to try to understand all types of opinions, hang-ups, interests, passions, loves, and hatreds, and yet to maintain both interest and professional detachment at the same time. That takes a special mindset. I don't have those qualities, and they are not qualities that anyone can fake. To complicate the situation, I propose that no matter how large or small a congregation, he or she, members of the congregation, that minister will be judged by the different, often unique perspectives of each of the members of the congregation. Teacher, counselor, confessor, referee, arbiter, how can one person fill all those roles? Of course, it's a rhetorical question. They can't. No one can. And depending upon the individual wants, needs, and desires of each church member, that same minister will be judged as good or bad, not spiritual enough, too spiritual, overbearing, or wishy-washy. I want to take this opportunity to offer a bit of advice to my fellow parishioners, both here at Star King and elsewhere. I think it's healthy and commensurate with human nature to be critical. But to focus on just one or two parts of your overall estimation of a person, minister, or other can shade your sense of realism in a negative fashion. Having joined this church 16 years ago and seen it led by 3 ministers, I can think of some attributes of each of them which I find perfect. But I also have found qualities which I find often frustrating. I wish they all possessed all the qualities I desire, but of course they don't. And I don't think it is realistic to expect that anyone, friend, acquaintance, or family, to exhibit all those traits that I might call a positive. Come to think of it, I don't myself. As we seek to determine who might be that perfect minister, maybe it would be wise to ask the question, silently, of course, might it be possible for me to define the perfect parishioner? Once I do that, maybe I'll have a more objective set of requirements for my judgments, because we are all human beings, even ministers.
Thank you, Bob. So today we are talking about ministers. What is a minister? What do we think of our ministers, why we need them, and our expectations of them? Sometimes those expectations are well-grounded, and sometimes they might be unreal and unattainable. I will begin by reading something that I was first given by one of our intern ministers years ago and have since found online in various forms. Now, we usually try to credit the original authors when we quote something, but this seems to have been adapted by so many religious groups, and several variations exist on their websites, so the source should be noted, I suppose, as anonymous. And so I felt free also to adapt it and add to it here. The perfect minister. The perfect minister is a young and energetic person with a maturity beyond his years. He is 27 years old with 35 years of experience. Her sermons are always thoroughly researched, intellectually satisfying, down to earth, funny, relevant to current events, and touch her congregation's feelings, leaving them intellectually and emotionally satisfied. She writes sermons all day long and does all of her maintenance chores on her lunch break. He is single and has a nice spouse and family. His kids are perfect. She is a humanist, theist, with Buddhist, pagan, Christian, and Jewish influences. On his day off, he meets with every committee, does building repairs, and publishes the newsletter, and is always available in his office. She invests 25 hours a week in sermon preparation, 20 hours in pastoral care, 10 hours in meetings, 5 hours in emergencies, 30 hours in prayer, 12 hours in correspondence, 6 hours in memorials and weddings, and 10 hours in creative thinking. Always taking a stand, but never confrontational, she has a burning desire to work with the children and youth and spends all of her time with the older folks. He is tall, but also short and thin and heavy set. She is talented, gifted, scholarly, practical, compassionate, understanding, patient, level-headed, dependable, loving, caring, neat, organized, cheerful, and above all, humble. Sounds easy, right? I sometimes wonder what kind of a minister I would be were I to pursue such a career. I don't think I would be a very good one. What would my ministerial style be like? I have not had very many ministers to emulate. This is my first church. So before Reverend Maria Christina was called, I knew the Reverends Mark Bellatini and Katie Kandarian, plus a couple of interns and guests. Mark was first. I had no idea what to expect when I first came here. It would not be an exaggeration to say that I was blown away. He made me a churchgoer and a Unitarian Universalist for life. He was an emotional dynamo. His sermons frequently resulted in him crying his eyes out and everyone in the room sobbing. He was warm and memorable, and I frequently felt that during his sermons, he was talking directly to me. He was connecting to some deep down emotional truth. Going to church was like therapy. Plus, he was a great cook, and was known to have groups of people over to his house for food and stimulating conversation, to look at his art, and to learn, because he was also a brilliant scholar. He would hold adult religious education classes on a variety of subjects, and he made you laugh. He was loved. And I mean loved in a very personal, meaningful, best friend kind of way. Because of this, it was devastating for many of our members when he moved on. Our next called minister was Katie. I worked closely with Katie for many years, and we had a good professional relationship. But she was never going to be my best friend. She was in many ways more professional than Mark. She separated her calling from her personal life. She had a firm grasp on ministry and that was presented in a more cerebral way. Now, don't get me wrong, we had many fun services, but she insisted that worship and entertainment were very separate things. She made her wishes and her style very clear, and it was fine. I adapted. She was a very different minister from Mark, but also very good. I think if I were a minister, I might take lessons from both. But then we would run into some contradictions. Can either approach lead a minister to perfection? Can a minister be loved and be friends with a congregation and yet still remain professional and even aloof when that is required? But even more basic than that, I could never be a minister simply because I could never remember everyone's names. One of the things a minister has to do is be able to call everyone by name. Good morning, John. Nice to see you, Bonnie. How are your kids, Janice? So yeah, you would need to remember their kids' names too. Really, you should be able to keep in mind everyone's names, their kids' names, their parents' names, whether or not their parents are still living, everyone's health status, their pets' names, where they live, their personal issues, who's having financial troubles, who's losing their jobs, who's getting married, their anniversaries, their birthdays, their kids' birthdays, what music, books, movies, or sports teams they like, their favorite foods, and to a certain extent, everyone's personal biographies. Oh my gosh, sometimes I can barely remember my best friend's names. The best I can do sometimes is a vague, hey, you. So now we have called Reverend Maria Cristina Vlasidas Bergoa. Will she be the perfect minister?
Absolutely.
Well, now I can't go on. My words said no, probably not, but maybe. The point is that there's really no such thing as a perfect minister. Just like there's no perfect spouse, or doctor, or politician, or child. No one is a paragon. We all have our strengths and our weaknesses. She is bringing her unique and special talents and experiences to this very difficult calling. Already we have learned from her. She has brought an amazing amount of cultural knowledge and experience. She has made us laugh. She has made us think. And for the first time since Mark was here, she had me, and I think most of us, sobbing with emotion. As we continue to get to know her and she gets to know us, we will learn how this relationship will develop. A couple of weeks ago, I was visiting the San Francisco church, and as luck would have it, I was there on the first service by their new called minister, Vanessa Rush Southern. And wouldn't you know it, she was fantastic too. She was warm and engaging, she was funny, she was a great speaker with a wonderful tone, just the right dramatic pauses. And she really knows how to make a relevant point clear in an understandable manner. I am sure she will serve that church for a long time with distinction, and that her congregation will go on to love and respect her and be thankful for her services, her energy, and her commitment to their congregation and the ideals of Unitarian Universalism. So how lucky are we as a church and as a movement? Every minister that I have experienced has either been very good or unbelievably excellent. We have talked about our selection process a few times recently, so I won't go into that today, but we should remember again the hard work and dedication of our search committee team. They did a fabulous job and spent many hours in careful consideration of the candidates, and this process allowed us to make a great choice and to call someone who is right for our needs. And I should mention the work of the worship committee, whose members put together most of our lay-led ministry, such as many of the services that we have enjoyed over this summer. So, to conclude, let us be thankful for the ministers we have known, for that, how they have helped us in our times of trouble, for how they have made us think, for how they have helped us heal, for that how they have helped us through hard times, for how they have allowed us to show our emotions, to cry, to laugh, to question, to get mad, to be frustrated, to be thankful, to be confused, to be overjoyed. And let us support and encourage our new minister, Reverend Maria Cristina, as she continues her journey of ministry and as she gets ever closer to being the perfect minister.